What is up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Lockdown Cavs podcast. We're back. Sorry for the delay, folks, but it's been a busy week for you, boy. On today's show, segment one, the Cavs New Jersey. Segment two, Summer League final takeaways. And segment three, we'll talk specifically about Luke Travers and what's coming for him down the pipeline, because he'll be out of our purview for a while. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Spotify, Apple Music. I would also be remiss to say a well-deserved congratulations to Dylan Stewart from Astro Radio, but also the new editor-in-chief over at Cleveland Magazine. Congrats to Dylan. Also, congrats to Denise Pulverine, who was our first contact at WKYC before she left for Cleveland Magazine and Great Lakes Publishing. She is now the publisher of that magazine.
She didn't leave because of us, to be clear.
You never know. But she left. She's doing great over there, and those are two excellent people. I can't wait to keep subscribing to that publication and supporting Dylan, who, frankly, is my favorite person in this very silly journalism industry. Evan, let's talk about the Cavs' new jerseys. Again, we've been away for a little bit, so you know these came out on Monday.
Yeah, well, first off, you came out with just hurting my feelings by calling someone else your favorite person. I'm just sitting right here.
You're just making this about you again, and I would just like to move on. I like you a lot, Evan, Dylan is just like an OU boy. Has given me a lot of great advice. I just love him. I love you too, but Dylan's my guy, and I'm just supporting him in this moment. I'm really proud of him. He's been grinding at this for years, and he's getting the opportunity he deserves. So you know what? Shout out, Dylan.
We stand a king working hard. Yes, congratulations to Denise as well. Chris, it's good to see you again. It's been probably a week since we actually recorded. Yeah, about a week. And So apologies if there's a little rust. Chris had to get the barnacles off his yacht encrusted in diamonds and platinum gold. So it's just, you know, an expensive procedure, and he oversaw the entire production, which you get it, you know, his money, you do what you do with it. But yeah, let's talk jersey, speaking of gold. Chris, we actually haven't really talked about it much. Like, we saw them before they came out, and you had some thoughts, and I didn't really share mine, but how do you feel about them?
I think they are an improvement, but they are overall just kind of fine.
I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, like, I think you all, someone, I didn't realize this on my own, so that's on me, but I looked at the, I'd seen the video, or someone had pointed out, like, how they have the same template as, like, the Jazz New Jerseys, which are bad. Like, the color scheme on those is bad. These at least have the good color scheme of the gold, and I think the white jersey is probably, I think, the overall the best looking thing. The Cavs wordmark logo, I think, is genuinely very good. I think there's just like some lacking on like the stitching. I think like it could use like a stripe on the side of like some basketball netting, some of that. I think any of the, I just think there's something lacking there. They look they're very clean to a point where like they almost look like almost too clean, and then I think I understand like why the C on the jersey exists, like why that's going to be a thing for forever, and why black's a thing. That overall jersey just doesn't like do its own for me.
It's gotta go away.
Yeah, and like I get, but like no one liked the jerseys in 2016. It's like you're just holding on to nostalgia. Like no one cares that they wore that jersey in 2016 when they won the finals. They care that they won the finals.
Yeah, and the key one here is LeBron hated those jerseys so much so that he ripped the sleeves of them once, and that was a bad look for Adidas in the league, that the league's best player was tearing the sleeves off these soccer-style kits. Fun times. But yeah, a lot of people ask me, like, why black? I'm like, if they won the championship in a different color, I think they wouldn't be highlighting the black as much. For all we know, it could be wine, true Vegas gold like this, and then navy instead of black as their color scheme at the end of the day if they didn't win it. Game 7 in Golden State, in those black short sleeve jerseys.
What I think works is a couple things. Number one, I to their credit, like, I think they are better. Like, their other jerseys were bad. They were just bad.
Oh, yeah. They were just not great in general. Like, they were just kind of messy.
Yeah.
I was on It's Cavalier with Mac and Corey last night, but just to kind of date when we're recording this a little bit. You could really tell that, like, Nike has dropped the ball in two of, like, the pseudo rebrands for Cleveland teams. Like, the Browns jerseys that Nike designed with, like, the Cleveland Browns on the pants and just, like, the drop shadow numbers and just the overall, like, futuristic look. Failure. They went back to what the Browns used to wear. And the Cavs, this feels like a step towards something they used to wear, but it kind of got lost along the way. Maybe they went off a different divergent path, too.
Yeah, like, I think this, you can look at the Jazz jerseys, look at the Cavs jerseys. I think, like, there's like a template there, and, like, this is what they've done in soccer as well. They're, you know, they did some of this with football stuff as well, where, like, there's very similar stuff. They rotate stuff around, and, like, it's not a push for, like, creative individual jerseys. It's just, like, churning them out a little bit, and the new is the kind of almost feel like the most important thing with them. And that, like, there's no originality. It's very corporate. Yeah. I'll be curious to see what, like, the fourth jersey looks like if there's something more out there with that. You know, I don't know, but, like, that, if you're gonna swing, that's where you gotta swing there. But high, you know, expectations aren't high. I think having I will say the best part of the jerseys to me, I think the black shorts are my favorite.
Really?
I love,
that's my least favorite part. I think it's messy with the Cavs word mark on the left.
I love
paint
that. I could, like, maybe I need to see them. Like, I think obviously, like, how these will look against whatever the new court design will look like as well will play a part in this. Mm-hmm. I think that Cavs word mark is the best logo they have, and, like, I could see those shorts, like, looking really
ever,
really good.
Or
no,
right,
just
now,
like, of these kits, not ever. Okay. None of these are the best. The best jersey they've ever had is the Cavs blue and orange from the Price Doherty years. Those are the best. And then the other ones
are
great.
The LeBron era ones are the best ones. Let's not get started again.
If we were going to, maybe this is like an August episode. If I was going to build, like, a Cavs jersey, like, four that, like, you could pull any from history, the four I would pull.
Chris, we did this exact episode during the pandemic.
Well, guess what? New jerseys, refresh some content, because we don't really stop podcasting, brother.
Forget about it.
What I would say is, like, if I was going to pick the four, it's like I would pick that Cavs orange and blue and orange jersey. I would pick the 90. I love the black 90s jersey for some reason. I would pick one. I would pick maybe which one's your favorite of the Cavs first LeBron, the white or the wine?
I like the white ones, and I'm partial to that navy one with the kind of barbershop pole checkerboard pattern on the piping and, like, on the side paneling and then around the armholes and the neck hole.
Yeah, so, like, pick one of those and then just, like, pick, like, the inverse of, like, whatever your main one is. Like, none of the jerseys they've had in, like, the modern times have ever are going to be their best. Like, the first, the chunk of the Kyrie era jerseys into the first LeBron weren't good. The refresh they did there weren't good. These are just, like, an improvement, and they're fine, and they're not, like, offensive. They're not, like, the Jazz ones I can't stand. I think that neon is terrible. Like, I think it looks bad. These at least are, like, palatable, and again, I think the black shorts, at least, like, that, I think that word mark is going to look really nice as we see
it. In regards to the Jazz rebrand or refresh, want to call it, you know it's bad when they roll it out with the purple jersey and they kind of bury the lead a little bit by making it seem like these white, black, and neon yellow jerseys are just for next season, when that's their permanent kit for at least the next 5 to 10 years at this point. But in my opinion, I like the Cavs refresh. I think less is more in this case, just in terms of scaling back things. The Cavs have a pretty diverse uniform history to begin with. Like, they could, a lot of things they could have drawn inspiration from, and I think that's kind of what they did with some of the color scheming stuff and obviously the basket V and just the overall Cavs word mark in general. I think simplifying your colors and branding, we talked about when the new logos dropped too, that, like, I think the Cavs just having so many logos during, like, the when Nike took over as the main jersey manufacturer really kind of muddled things for Cleveland a little bit too and made things a little confusing. I think simplifying things works, but Conrad Burry, who's a friend of mine, just, like, made this mock-up where he just colored in some striping around, like, the waistband and along the shorts and then the armholes and neck holes. Like, that's perfect to me. Like, I, when the Cavs describe these jerseys, and here's the wine one if you're watching at home too, like, the Cavs describe these jerseys as monochromatic. Like, that's a very good way to put it. The very simple, the very plain. I think I'm going to hold and reserve my full judgment until I see them on the court, but they're a visual upgrade, at least from what they were wearing last season. And it's just a thing, like, navy and black don't mix to begin with, and I think the Cavs making black the core part of their identity is the best thing they could do if they really want to do it, and that's fine. But if I had to change one thing, like, you like the black shorts a lot, I would get rid of the front number on the black jersey and just have that C there.
Yeah.
Or center it, because it looks really cluttered in the lower left-hand corner of, like, if you just, like, want to think of it as, like, a square on the chest of that jersey. But other than that, it could be worse. I guess that's what I'm telling myself. Like, hey, it could be worse. But there's clearly some limitations that come with working with Nike. Like, Nike only has preset templates and things you have to work around with. Maybe this is how, like you said, like, the Jazz were very simple and plain, but the Jazz are also really out there. But also the Cavs could be a little more simple and plain as well. And maybe this is a trend in for other teams as well that don't have, like, that classic legacy look, like the Lakers, the Heat, the Celtics, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, the Cavs, I think if there's a way to read this to some way, it's like they are looking for that classic look. And, like, I don't think this – and, like, maybe, like, the color change and all that is, like, a push to that in some way. All right, after the break, let's talk about Summer League, our final takeaways from the Cavs' time in Las Vegas. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline, guys, is absolutely the best place for you to get the latest news, odds, and everything when it comes to sports betting. Find reviews and news of every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the online resource for your sports wagering information, from live in-game betting, scores, and podcasts. They have you covered. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. For instance, Evan, you can go bet right now if you're a baseball fan. It's summer and, you know, you're watching the Guardians. You're saying, hey, Jose Ramirez is having a great year. He's plus 5,000 to win AL MVP. Shohei Ohtani from the Angels is the favorite to win that award right now. But you can go check that all that out. Guardians game odds, Cavs futures, UFC stuff, anything you kind of want to find to bet, you could go do that at BetOnline. Remember, that's betonline.net. That's where the game starts. They're your number one online source for odds, lines, and games. All right, back here in Locked On Cavs. Want to tell you, by the way, to go check out the NFL Top 50 from Locked On. Which NFL stars moved the betting line the most? Starting July 18th, that's already started, Locked On gives you the 50 most valuable players in the NFL from the odds makers at BetOnline. Available July 18th in Locked On NFL, wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube. All right, let's talk about Summer League. Evan, when you think back to Summer League, what are you going to feel like you are mostly going to take away from this? We're going to talk. I want to, like, put a pin in Luke Javert specifically because he's going to go back to Australia. We're going to talk about that in the third segment. But when you specifically think about Summer League as a whole, perhaps aside from Travers, what stood out to you? What mattered to you?
What really stood out to me in terms of just the Cavs during Summer League is kind of figuring out where Ochai Agbaji could support this team, make an impact early, and maybe carve minutes out in the rotation. Like, I was talking to some folks about this. Like, there's a possibility Agbaji plays 15 minutes to start his rookie season. He slowly maybe works his way back into the rotation. I think having Sexton, at least, LeVert and Okoro ahead of him certainly muddles things a little bit in terms of two-guard depth. But I think there's a path just where Agbaji can help this team, and it became a lot more clear. And, like, the Cavs weren't, like, super creative offensively, obviously. It's Summer League. You can't take too much stock from it. But the fact that he was shooting threes, making them at, like, a 36.5% clip, I think, off the top of my head, is pretty encouraging. The fact that he took more three-pointers than most Cavs pretty much have in the rookie season up to this point, especially during Summer League play, like, that's encouraging in itself, too. So that's what really stood out to me. But I also have to take it with a huge grain of salt too, because it's Summer League play as well, so you can't, like, really say, like, yeah, Ochai Agbaji is gonna be, like, a day one starter. Like, I think folks, like, in my mention saying, like, oh, Agbaji should start over LeVert, Sexton, Okoro, etc. I'm like, I don't think it's gonna work that way. Maybe he can be in the mix if he comes out just absolutely guns blazing in training camp and looks way ahead of schedule compared to things, but he's also a rookie. He's also the number 14 pick in this year's draft. Like, it's not, historically speaking, he's not expected to make a huge impact right away, but there's a path that I'm starting to see where, like, okay, maybe he won't be, like, a obviously, like, massive game changer. And obviously Cleveland doesn't need Ochai Agbaji to make or break their season. They just need him to kind of support them. And I think that's what I started to really see, especially when things dwindled down in Vegas, like what stood out and how he can just be a difference maker for Cleveland when he does get minutes on the floor.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me to take away from this is a reminder that, like, this is just going to look a little bit different when we get to the fall.
Oh, yeah.
Like, defensively, I think in particular, I think offensively there's a template for, like, what he did in summer league that's going to, I think, somewhat, like, you can see how it could work. Him coming off of DHOs, just firing up threes, him coming off of screens, him being the actual spacer off the ball is going to be stuff that translates. That's going to be how he carves out his offensive role. This is not going to be a guy that is going to, if he has the ball in his hand, it's going to be passing, attacking, closeouts. Just, it's not going to be more complicated than that. Maybe, you know, late in the shot clock, there's a quick isolation attempt. That's where he gets those reps. But they're not going to be anything like that. It's going to be the diet, a lot of what we saw in summer league, of him just being willing to pull up and take threes and do that kind of stuff. I don't agree with the comp, but, like, that's why people have said, like, the Desmond Bane thing. And, like, that's crazy to me. That's not what that's going to be. But he's, like, that's, I can understand how people make that template argument and go there. Defensively is where I kind of just, I think we have to remind ourselves that, like, and I had to remind myself a lot watching, is that, like, his responsibilities and what he's asked to do are going to just be different because he's not playing with Evan Mobley, Jared Allen in summer league. Like, mm-hmm. Odds are over 48 minutes, he's going to be on the court with at least one of them, and maybe at times both of them, right? He's going to have these guys who are all defensive caliber level dudes. Evan Mobley has the upside to be the defensive player of the year in the NBA someday. Jared Allen is a very solid, well above average rim protector who is pretty versatile as well. Like, you have these guys that are going to set the tone for your defense. Like, that, they were switching a lot more in summer league, and the skill sets are just different. It's not going to play the same. His role is going to be smaller because he's going to have to be asked to do less. And, like, so it's like I look at the defensive side and I say, okay, like, he looks strong enough. That's all I really care about in terms of that. Like, I can't take much more away from that. Offensively, it's where I look at for Agbaji. And then everyone else, it's like, I'm interested in Isaiah Mobley. Travers was one of the biggest surprises, frankly, of summer league. Like, he came out and was much better than I think I expected, and I think some people in the team expected, right? Like,
sneaky athleticism that Luke Travers has, a real lunch pail player. He wears his hard hat, first one in the gym, last one out kind of player, you know what I mean? A coach's son, possibly, if you will.
Well, there's no one else that really, I guess, like, when I look at this, Evan, that really changed my trajectory of what I think of them in summer league.
I ask you something, because this apparently might seem hot takey to some. Do you think there's a possibility Agbaji gets minutes down in the G League with a charge just to kind of get him as much burn as possible? Because there is a possibility where he doesn't crack the rotation as well, like, to start the season, just because the Cavs, especially if they do bring back Colin Sexton, have, like, an overwhelming overabundance of depth. Like, yes, Agbaji answers a lot of questions, but maybe he just can't crack the rotation because there's only so many mouths to feed in J.B. Bickerstaff's just team right now, and we can list 10 or 11 players that could possibly play ahead of him at this time, too. Like, that's the tricky part of it all. It's like, do you think it's a possibility he could play the G League a bit?
I would say no. I think it's, like, not, like a 0% thing.
That's how I feel, too. I give it, like, a 7% chance.
Oh, I'm like 2. I would say, like, 2.
If he picks up a bunch of DNP CDs and the Cavs go on a long road trip, like, I wouldn't bat an eye if, like, there's an announcement saying, like, hey, Ochai's going to stay back and practice with Dan Giroux and then Isaiah Mobley and the Charge, and then, like, the Charge have, like, a two-game homestand that week, and, like, he plays in both of those and plays, like, 36 minutes a night.
Yeah, I think that if there's, like, how teams handle this is interesting because, like, James Bouknight was the Hornets' late lottery first-round pick last year. Only played 31 games in the NBA, was a summer league guy for them more than anything else. But, like, I'm checking
right
now.
That's who I think of a little bit, is, like, what if he gets Bouknight at just the end of the rotation here, where, like, he does make appearances, but he seldom does appear at times, just because he needs that time to, like, marinate.
Yeah, Bouknight played 7 games in the G League. And, like, I kind of think, like, we're on a trajectory here where, like, maybe it's, like, 10 minutes to start, maybe it's 12 minutes to start. It would not surprise me if he is kind of, like, offensively pushing some, like the way that he plays and the what he does is just such clearly something that fits what they need that it wouldn't surprise me if, like, maybe it's not the first preseason game or whatever. I don't think it's, like, out of the question that he is finding a niche for himself. And I think mm-hmm. that's what you're looking for him to do. I just, if it goes really badly, like, training camp could go badly, he could get hurt, like, things could change, and this could change how we answer this question. I just think he is on a trajectory where, like, if you were to tell me today, if I had to pick between, like, him and Jeddy Osman as, like, 10th guy in the rotation, I think I'm picking Agbaji 10 out of 10 because I think they're both willing to shoot. They're both willing to do that stuff. Osman has a better history as, like, a passer that has never really manifested in the NBA, I think you one might have hoped. He also is an absolutely horrid defender, and JB doesn't trust him. And I think Agbaji checks a lot of boxes of a guy that I could see Bickerstaff trusting pretty implicitly.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is coach speak, of course, like Mike Garrity saying, and JB also saying, like, he's incredibly mature and poised for being a rookie, but also he is 22 years old, so he's the same age as Darius Garland heading into his rookie season. So you'd hope maybe some of the maturity and, like, the refinement in his game is there. But yeah, I think maybe I retract my stance of, like, saying maybe 15 to 18 minutes a night, perhaps 10 minutes tops, and then, like, he claws his way up. And again, we say this a lot. If your name's not Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, because there's two Mobleys on the roster, I have to specify now, and Jared Allen, you're going to be fighting for minutes in this rotation no matter what. And Agbaji is no exception to this. Like, he is going to be battling Okoro, probably for, like, bench minutes especially. He's going to be pushing Osman and Windler. Like, those two obviously won't be a factor, but if those two are on the roster, like, they're going to be in the mix possibly too. And then obviously LeVert, and then if Sexton, if comes back, Sexton as well. So it's an interesting dynamic. It's something I'm definitely going to be watching when training camp opens up, probably like mid to late September, and then we'll just kind of see where it goes when the preseason starts.
Yeah, all right, after the break, let's talk about Luke Travers. So we'll talk about the Cavs' Aussie second-round pick and what's coming next for him after this. All right, we're back here in Lockdown Cavs. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Remember to go check out the NFL Top 50. Check out Lockdown NBA. A ton of great content all around the Lockdown Network for you to check out today, whenever you feel like it. All right, Evan, let's talk about Luke Travers. What did you, before we get into, like, where he goes from here, what did you make of him in summer league? What stood out to you? What surprised you? What didn't surprise you? What did you make of the Luke Travers summer league experience?
Well, I first off saw the Knicks didn't really allow external media Jalen Brunson's intro presser, which is odd. But what did they make of Luke Travers? Besides just the jokes that he's a white player and you're making all those jokes just that you can make about athletes that hustle that are of the Caucasian variety, Travers was really impressive. Like, I talked to folks who are a lot more akin to just looking at international prospects, and they're like, yeah, I mean, I guess I can understand why Cleveland took him. He's kind of like a point forward type player who could be maybe a little bit of something down the line. Like, he was still incredibly raw at the NBL, and you saw a lot of that rawness at times on offense where, like, yeah, there were possessions when he was able to get to the basket, but there were other possessions where, like, his shot wasn't falling, or he just looked flustered, he was rushing things, and just, he's unrefined offensively, but he plays a lot of energy, plays with a lot of hustle, and I think made a pretty positive impact, I'd say, on the Cavs, just impressions of him. Like, clearly they thought highly of him enough to draft him during the pre-draft process, but, like, left a good enough impression to say, like, okay, he's going back to Perth to play with the over in the NBL for this season. Mm-hmm. Maybe if Cleveland has the roster space next season, like, if they need to maybe to say, like, okay, they have a two-way contract available. Let's say they convert Isaiah Mobley to a guaranteed contract because Mobley's ahead of the curve and you have a two-way spot. You bring Travers over, have him on a two-way deal, and let him just develop between Cleveland and with the Charge as well. Eventually, because what sticks with me with Travers is he says he tries to model his game after Joe Ingles, just in terms of just Australian Hoopers specifically. And, like, if the Cavs could kind of get a player like that where it's a bigger forward who plays hard, maybe isn't like a world stopper on defense, but, like, plays good positional defense and can, like, be in the right spots at the right time. Like, there's something of value there, and having a high energy wing like that come off the bench is always just a good thing to have in general, and certainly fills a void that's been kind of lacking for the Cavs ever since Varejao finished his retirement tour here.
What I think for him is interesting is just, like, I think that he plays at his own pace. He does not get sped up by what's going on in him. He does not get slowed down by what's going on around him. He just kind of does what he is going to do. And, like, there's something really admirable about that. I think the playmaking stuff he did was interesting. I think his size was interesting. I think you can tell that there's a physical part of his game that's going to have to catch up in terms of his strength, in terms of his footwork and things. Like, there's some of that that is yet to fully, I think, figure itself out. What I think stands out is that he seems to know where to go. He knows he's good court awareness. Like, there's little things you're just like, oh, like, this guy can play basketball. It's not just like an athlete you're trying to mold into a basketball player. Like, this guy kind of knows what he's doing. There are obviously parts of his game that we have to see how they actually come along. Like, his three-point shooting is just, like, the biggest. Like, he was 25% in the NBL last year. Like, that's just going to have to change. If he's going to, like, ultimately kind of, like, hit whatever Apex is going to be. And I ultimately even think that, like, him going back to the NBL makes the most sense here. I can understand, like, if the Cavs, if some of the indication is that, like, they would have liked him to stick around and be around training camp and go through that. For him, I can't see that being fully worth it unless he's going to get like the G League doesn't seem to me to be like a clear like improvement as a thing for him. And even if you talk to people on the team, they've said like it is a year away. Like he needs to weight train. His diet needs to improve. Like he needs to take those steps to really evolve as a human and get bigger and stronger. And like I'm not like fully convinced that like where the G League was at and how the Cavs kind of approach it that the NBL is like. Like, that makes sense to me that that's where he's going to go back to. And it's because it's not like he's going to get to be in the roster and play minutes. Like, it's a roster that doesn't have room for him. And, like, a two-way thing doesn't make sense for him, probably financially or really for where his career's at.
No, I absolutely agree. Just looking into things, also, the NBL season does start in, like, early to mid-October. So it might just be a bit of a crunch to attend training camp with the Cavs, then head back to the NBL as well. So, like, I was kind of given the impression there's hope he would try to attend camp, but like they understood like there's no pressure on the Cavs part to say like, Luke, we want you here in camp with us. Like, I think this time in summer league was a valuable opportunity to evaluate him as a player. He could always be an interesting prospect. He also could never come over to the NBA as well. Like, if he carves out a career at the NBL, like he could just be happy being at home around his friends and family and loved ones and not maybe make that transition and jump ship to the NBA, even though he has like mentioned like, yeah, I'd like to be an NBA player one day. Like, there is a real possibility he just never comes over to the NBA as well at the end of the day too. But he definitely stood out during summer league for me. Like, he was one of the biggest like notables on a night-to-night basis when he did play for the Cavs. Chris, just, I guess, because I don't really have much else to say, like, he just really stood out. Like, a lot of high-energy plays, a lot of, like, intangible stuff you see from him. Is there anybody else who really stood out for you? Like, you mentioned Isaiah Mobley in the last segment. For me, Mobley, I think, looked good, but has some things he needs to iron out, and that's the beauty of him being on a two-way contract that works.
Mm-hmm.
But I see what the Cavs are maybe scheming and planning here with just him being like a high energy, stretchy big behind his brother and Jared Allen long term. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But did anybody else stand out to you just during this summer league process for the Cavs?
I know some people have gotten like really into RJ Nembhard. I don't feel like I learned anything new about RJ Nembhard. Can I answer it that way? Fair. Is that?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who got more into RJ Nembhard because I watched him a lot with the Charge, and I'm just like, there's something here. And I still think there's something there, and I think this is a better showcase to maybe show that to people and maybe just the league in general, because, like, let's say the Cavs don't keep him on a two-way and maybe they sign someone else there. Like, let's say, like, a Marcella does come to training camp for the Cavs and he continues just, like, his hot streak. Like, he's a player who stood out for me. Like, let's say he continues, like, his solid play from summer league during preseason and the Cavs, like, okay, RJ, we're gonna cut you from your two-way deal and sign a Mar so we can kind of keep him under lock and key because he is an intriguing enough prospect. But Nembhard, I think, to me, like, I understand what you mean, but, like, you haven't seen anything different from him. But for me, I think it's just more so that there could be something there where I still think he could fill that spot as, like, a third or fourth, like, point forward off the bench for you that, like, pencils into, like, a similar role as, like, Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade, where, like, he's not ever going to be, like, a great player, like, a great high-impact player who plays on a night-to-night basis, but if there's an instance or like a situation where you have to play him 10, 15, possibly even 20 minutes, like he's not going to look completely lost out there. And I think that's kind of what you're hoping for with RJ Nembhard, because he does have clear limitations to his game, and those were on full display at Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, like I can't imagine, like, that the way he plays when he's, like, the lead option, and, like, this is what people within the organization have said when I've asked him about this, is just, like, the way he plays with so much of the ball in his hand is just never going to be how he plays in the NBA. So, like, I need to see him, like, play off ball and, like, what that looks like for me to get a better grasp of it. We just haven't seen it. And, like, that's where his game is ultimately going to need, I think, to develop. Because he's never going to be a guy that just gets, like, bring the ball up, take a bunch of pull-up three. Like, the way he played in Summer League and the way he played in the G League is just not going to translate. The real answer here, I honestly think, and you mentioned him, is Amar Saleh. Like, he is 20 years old, 6'9", 190, looks skinnier than 190. I would have guessed, like, 175. Like, he's really lean. Went undrafted in 2021 draft. But, like, a really interesting frame of player, really energetic. Really athletic. I'm curious to see, like, what his professional future holds. He's signed to a team in Lithuania, but, like, maybe there's a professional out in this contract. That's not uncommon.
He does have a clause in his, like, an NBA opt-out clause in his contract.
But does, like, the G League appeal to him? Do they finagle a two-way contract for him with someone else? Like, there's just, like, minutia to that I think is kind of important there. But I thought he was really intriguing, and, like, you could see him. Like that's the kind of guy at 20 years old who is moldable and is playing with energy and that kind of stuff, and is just doing that kind of thing versus playing the ball in his hands, that I am intrigued by and would want to see, like, what the development process for that would kind of look like. Because he popped, and I had no idea who he was popped coming into Summer League, but he popped in that setting, and that's, like, a good – if you're going to pop there and we see where that goes, I'm not intrigued with any 20 years old. Like, I'm pro trying to mold, like, a 20-year-old if you're the Cavs that can be versatile for you, can run the floor and do some of that stuff. I'm into that.
No, I'm into it too. He popped for me when I was just doing, like, a deep dive on everyone on this roster, just, like, statistically looking at them, seeing if there's any just, like, tangible, like, footage I can watch just to, like, get an understanding of their game. And I'm like, yeah, there's something here. Like, he's super young, like you said, but, like, he – popped in Lithuania, where he's playing now. But yeah, he's super efficient, like you said. I think there's something there. You can definitely mold him if you're the Cavs, but I think a lot of it does come down to, like, money. Do you want to be on a G League salary, or do you want to be possibly making more overseas? Because he had, like, a solid season last year for the Lithuanian club he played for. I don't want to butcher the name, so I'm not going to try and pronounce it, but he could possibly finagle that into a more lucrative contract as well, especially if, like, he rides this momentum off Summer League, where, like, he played really well and just looked really good for the Cavs. Like, didn't get any all Summer League honors. I think just the fact that there's so many teams competing, it's kind of hard to, like, just have Cavs players who were good but not great at times on the floor get those honors. But, like, Amar Saleh, like, really stood out, besides obviously, like, the marquee three rookies that were playing for the Cavs that they drafted like a week or two prior.
Yes. All right. That's going to be it. We are going to have mailbags that I just didn't have time to edit. Later this week, we'll have some other stuff I just didn't have time to edit. So you're going to get 5 episodes over the next couple of days. I know it's later in the week. I know it's kind of crammed. So we're going to throw all that up and hope you guys enjoy the content. Again, sorry for the delay that this was on me for just being away for some work stuff and just the circumstances not being clean. We do have some fun production news to come that I'm excited to announce when we get to do it. And again, the usual caveat: if something happens with Colin Sexton, we will podcast about it. But guess what? There's nothing right now. So,
well, folks, I'm also going on vacation next week, so this might be the last time you see me for a while. But I'll be tanner, or I'll just be really pale. So
yeah, Danny, or really red. I'm gonna book some fun folks to come through while Evan is out.
Maybe I'll check in from the beach at one point. Just be like, what's up, players?
If you do that, I will throw your phone into the... I will come to you and throw your phone in the ocean for doing that.
It's a long drive, but I'll see you there.
You know, when you got the lockdown Cavs money, Evan...
That's true. Are you going to take the PJ or the private helicopter?
Yeah. I mean, I got options, you know? So, you do. All right, that's going to be it. It's been Lockdown Cavs. I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well. We're about to get thunderstorms here in Cleveland, so if you're in the area, please stay safe. Things are crazy. And until next time,
stay cool, stay hydrated.
Yeah. Bye.